This is a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat with guests Ha Ha Tonka. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. All right, so welcome to another edition of No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chats. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, and we're coming to you today outside the lovely Grog Shop in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, where we are about to witness the greatness of a Murder by Death and Ha Ha Tonka show. And I am joined right now by two members of Ha Ha Tonka, Brian and Brett. So say hi, guys.
Howdy.
Hey.
All right. And you guys are the two guitar players in the band. And Brett also plays mandolin quite proficiently, I might add.
Thank you very much.
And you're also the two lyrics writers as well. So we got both of you here, which is great. And Ha Ha Tonka is, I always say, my favorite alt-country band in the world. You guys totally rock it. And so it's great to finally get the chance to sit down and talk to you for one of these interviews, because it's been well over a year since you assholes were in Cleveland. What is up with that?
Well, we don't get to choose this year because we're at the end of an album cycle, so we're doing a lot of support stuff.
We haven't
really done a whole lot of headlining, minus festivals and things. We haven't done a whole lot of headlining this year, so you know, we're just kind of rolling with the other bands.
Yeah,
haven't really hit Cleveland.
I would love coming to Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, this place is awesome. Grog Shop, the Beachland Ballroom, of course, is phenomenal. So we got nothing against Cleveland.
Okay, well, I was starting to wonder there, because I mean, it was April 15th of last year. I remember,
because
that was the date that No Surf Music happened to be founded.
That's
right. Oh, wow.
So, indeed.
That was one of the signs of the apocalypse.
Yeah, I think probably it was, yeah. But we still got a few left until December 21st. So, you know, we'll see if we can fit them all in our busy schedule, I guess. But, last time you guys were in town, you were touring on what was then your brand new album, Death of a Decade. And, like you say, you're sort of winding down on the support of that. But how have you enjoyed the success of that album since it came out? I mean, what's the response been?
It's been great. Honestly, it exceeded all our expectations. And whenever we make a record, the goal is to be able to make another record, and we will definitely get to make another record. So I think that Death of a Decade accomplished a lot of the stuff that we wanted to accomplish with those songs and that piece of music. So, I mean, we couldn't have been happier with how it was received, how the shows went in support of it, and they're still going in support of it. So we're just really grateful and thankful for the record and everything that's given to us.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I know we certainly gave it a good review, and I know a lot of
the Bloodshot pays you really well.
Well, that's true. Josh throws me a little bit under the table all the time, but no. Seriously, it was definitely one of the best albums of last year, and I think that you guys showed a lot of growth on that album. But before we get to that. I actually want to take a step back, because there's something else that's kind of exciting, at least for vinophiles like myself. You guys just issued, for the very first time, your first album, Buckle in the Bible Belt, on vinyl. So that is very, very cool. How did that come about? Why did you decide to do it now?
Well, we've had a lot of requests, you know, obviously from people. And
me included.
Yes,
every time I see you.
And it made sense, you know. I mean, we have the other two on vinyl, so to complete your trilogy, your vinyl trilogy, it made sense to go ahead and get it on there. So we had to twist Bloodshot's arm a little bit.
Yeah, because it is a financial investment from the label. Right. Vinyl is really expensive to print out, and that record, you know, came out in 2007, I believe.
Right.
So we were getting enough heat from people saying, like, why is it Buckle on vinyl? We finally convinced Bloodshot, and thankfully it's sold in that record. Bloodshot.
Should hopefully recoup.
We're no longer the doghouse of Bloodshot on this one.
So. Well, that's good, because, I mean, I think, you know, I often say that album, Buckle, is, at least in my mind, the second best alt country album that has ever been released. And I know that that's saying a lot.
We'll take
but,
number two.
Well, I mean, Lucinda's Car Wheels is number one in my mind, and it's pretty hard to beat that.
That would be a tough one to take down.
Yes, yes. And West is bookending it right behind.
Wow.
If it weren't for that Mommy, You're So Sweet song, it might have overtaken you. But, I mean, Buckle from beginning to end was just super high energy, just a blast. And it really, I think, set the tone for you guys as a band in a lot of ways. Luke, what's up? Want to sit in on this?
Sure.
Come on. We have just been joined by Mr. Lucas Long, the bass player and bass singer extraordinaire for the band.
Low end of my game over there.
Absolutely. He keeps it all on the bottom, but we were just talking
but
a little.
I like it on top.
There you go. We were just talking a little bit about your first album, Buckle, and its general greatness. But like I was saying, you know, I think it set the tone in a lot of ways for you as a band in general, because even though it did sort of have a very typical kind of alt-country sound, definitely heavy on the alt, in other words, more rock than country in a lot of ways, it had a lot of the elements there. I mean, it definitely had Brian's writing, which is one of the key elements that your band relies on, I think, is the lyrics and sort of the literary sense that you bring to the writing, and it had a lot going for it, I think. When you guys look back on it, what do you think about that first album, and you know, how does it stand up to where you are now?
I honestly haven't listened to it.
Yeah, I don't think I've listened to it in probably 3 years.
Well, you can play some right now. I've got it on my iTunes.
No, that's all right. I think one of the ways that I would judge how it stands up is what we still play live. We still, night and night out, play three tracks off that record. So I think that says something about those songs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I honestly think you could play almost all of them, even with two other records since then. I mean, there's not a sleeper on that whole album. Which
I don't know. There might be some people going for drinks whenever we played
You Lit Up the Night.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that one. It's a little slower, it's a little more toned down, but I think it's got some very cool vocal effects and all that. So, you know, everything can't be St. Nick on the 4th with all that bam, 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 kind of, you know?
That's true.
So, but I think it definitely has stood up. So anybody who hasn't had the chance up till now, you want to check it out and get it on vinyl now that it's available, because that really is the best way to listen to an awesome, awesome album.
It looks really cool, too. I don't know if you've seen them in there.
I just caught a glance on my way in, but I will take a closer look in a few minutes. So, congratulations on that. That is very cool that it did come out. But I think, you know, since then, you guys have gone through something of a transition. You know, like I said, I think that first album sort of had a pretty typical alt-country sound, but you've been adding more and more elements. You know, on your second album, you had sort of more of a folky kind of country influence. Brett picked up the mandolin and you know, played on a few more of those, and you had, I think, more prominent vocal harmonies. And a few other elements. And then on this latest album, Death of a Decade, I really think you came into your own with your own sound. Is that the way that you guys feel about it too? That you know, you get on something that really sets you apart as a band from others?
I mean, you always want to think that you make your own music and have your own sound.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's influenced to such a degree that it's almost impossible to not sort of sound like someone else. But I think with Death of a Decade, we came as close to sounding like ourselves as possible.
Okay. And what would you say are some of those influences that you guys brought into doing that album?
You mean like other bands?
Yeah, well, artists? I mean, things that, you know, you listened to in the past that you might have, you know, incorporated in some way but made your own as well, yeah.
Brett, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you know, we're always listening to what the latest hip indie artists are doing, I think. Paying attention to what people like. And I don't necessarily think that we steal ideas from those people, but we definitely try to create Mahala Tonka feeling the same way that maybe like Bon Iver might do it in like a different style, you know. So, I mean, I don't know, it's just like the stuff we listen to is just all over the board. So, I think there's a little bit of influences from other bands. Not specifically, more ideas, I think. And feeling is what we really kind of focused on with this record.
Was it good?
Just how we can create feelings and things in music.
Okay. Well, I think that that definitely was one of the things that came out on the album was, you know, that sort of sense of pathos of being able to lead your listener where you wanted them to go in a lot of ways. Was that then something that you specifically were gearing for Death of a Decade, do you think?
Yeah, I think we wanted it to be, this word sounds dirty in the music industry, but accessible. Like, we wanted people to be able to listen to it and hopefully get it, you know, not try. Like, I think oftentimes, like, we've been guilty of trying to rap things in mystery too much or have very coded lyrics. Or, and with Death of a Decade, it's a little bit more straightforward and out there. I think that helps.
Okay. And just for the listeners, I want to note that we have been joined by a latecomer. It's a party now here. The band's drummer, Lennon Bone. How you doing there, Lennon?
I've been wrangled into helping Murder by Death record a thank you song for their Kickstarter.
Okay, well, that's good because they need the help to get their vinyl out as well. But we're glad you could join us. And so we've got the whole band here now. Terrific. So, sort of keeping on something you just said, which is your lyrics, and you, Brian, do predominantly write most of the lyrics for the band. I think it's kind of an interesting style that you've got, because a lot of different songwriters, you can put them in a box as to where their particular talents lie. You know, somebody like Dylan or Kristofferson or Ray Wiley Hubbard or somebody is predominantly a poet. They find ways to use language in a particularly special way. Other people are storytellers. You know, you look at the Phil Oakes or somebody like that. You know, they come out with these big ideas and all that. I think it's interesting because you're one of the few people who I know of who really just has a talent for finding one perfect gem of a line. Like, almost every single one of your songs has just one power, rememberable line, you know? And I know that you kind of make fun of it sometimes, but I still think it's one of your best. It's from St. Nick on a Fourth and a Further. This glimpse of brilliance is far better than your long look at mediocrity. I mean, that just sticks in your craw. And, you know, you have so many like that. Is that something that just comes naturally? Or do you think when you're writing, you know, this is something that you know, people are going to remember that's really going to make the song?
I don't know if it comes naturally. Thanks for the compliment, too. That's going too far.
Not at all, man. I think, not at all.
I always try to come up with words that I like how they flow together. And if it can actually capture a thought or emotion that might fit in a song, then it's something I'll keep around in a little notebook. And then oftentimes it'll kind of be a little, hey, this would actually fit here. Is the cadence of the rhythm that flows together well. I'm always hoping to come up with lines like that, but it doesn't always happen. And when it does, you know, you really want to get it down quick before it escapes.
I've got you. Well, I've had that happen to me many, many times. So it's good to always keep a notebook with you, that's for sure. So what is your songwriting process, I guess, as a band then? Is it usually, you know, either you or Brett will come up with the lyrics first and, you know, start the music and then take it to the band? Or how does that work as a group?
No, it's usually just comes from a stem of different ideas. We'll start with either melody lines, you know, maybe short versions of a verse and a chorus, or a drum beat, or little piece of piano music or whatever it might be. And then just kind of, I mean, Brian will come up with a lot of lyrical ideas, maybe like a hook or something. And then we just kind of all get together and just rip it up, you know, and say what we want to do to it, try to make up new parts. Everyone is completely involved in every situation, so we spend a lot of time arguing over things and creating the best stuff that we can as a score.
It's kind of a cool birth of a song, or what could be a song, that we've worked on a little bit in New York a couple weeks ago. And it's a really late night, and drank heavily. And the next day, nursing massive hangovers, me and Brett were sitting around in our manager's apartment in Brooklyn, and he was kind of playing around with this thing in open D, which, or in drop D tuning, which I don't think we have any other songs in drop D tuning. And thought popped into my head because the melody was playing. It's like, last night we knew that today was going to be a terrible tomorrow. And so, like, we came up with this whole little thing about a terrible tomorrow. And then we rehearsed that before this tour with the whole band. I think it's actually going to be a good song. So. Don't print this. But the terrible tomorrow is something that I look for in the next record.
Okay. Well, it's recorded now, so you're stuck with the dude. So everybody's gonna have to remember that for the future. But I guess it, you know, like you say, you are sort of a band that incorporates everybody into it. So I do have something I want to ask Luke here, because I think. You, in a lot of ways, on Death of a Decade, had a larger role to play in some ways. I mean, not that you weren't always there and you didn't have lines, but I thought that your vocals especially played a much more prominent role on this album and really, you know, set the tone for some of the songs. And while you sang on some of the earlier works, you know, this time it was really noticeable. Was that a conscious thing on your part, or did it just seem to work out that...
I think we were conscious of trying to put as many vocals in as we could. Mm-hmm. And I'm not naturally a gifted singer, you know. It definitely takes a lot of work for me to hit stuff. I can just sing low. You know, that's what I've got right now. So, in the studio, it was basically Brian and I and the thing, and I'd be trying to hit something, and he'd be, you know... same singing the note, and then I would hear it and then just try to match it up to the headphones as I was, you know, going in there. So I mean, it was fun, you know. Singing with the dudes is my favorite part of the whole thing, you know, when we're all together on that. So it raises everybody's involvement and, you know, the intensity of the song, I think, in general.
Right.
But as long as you can do it tastefully, I'm sure you can go overboard and just like oversaturate shit, but
right.
I thought that part.
Well, I thought that definitely was one of the things that set this record apart from the others was sort of the intricacy of the harmonies. I mean, you always had harmonies, and even, you know, back on Buckle, you had Hangman, which is a four-part harmony piece that you guys, like you mentioned, still do quite often, I believe, on stage. And you know, you had some of that element in there, but almost every single song on Death of a Decade, you know, really depended on vocal harmonies to one degree or another. So I thought that, you know, that was definitely a step forward as far as, you know, developing something different from other bands that are out there. Is that sort of the direction that you guys think that you're going to go in the future as well? You know, moving on from this album, like you said, you're already starting to write some new stuff. What do you sort of see, you know, developing for your next album?
It's still pretty early on in the process. I think we'll always want to do big vocal harmonies because that, as Luke said, raises our energy level and usually translates very well live and on recorded albums. So I think that will always be a part of our band's sound.
Okay. And sort of getting back to the writing a little bit, I noticed... you did have a few more expansive themes on Death of a Decade as well. Like, you know, in the past, a lot of it, you sort of has this Missouri mythology about you, being that you're all from the Shelby States, and you mostly still live there today. And, and a lot of your songs, you know, whether it's a reference to the KK Highway or, you know, an old Missouri tale like Katie Mountain, something like that, you have a lot of that mythology. And, you know, you carried some of that through with The Humorist, the song about Mark Twain, which is my personal favorite on the album. I think that is just a tremendous, tremendous song in so many ways, and a great tribute to Mr. Twain. But you also brought in some other elements. You know, you had a song about the Hezuhita wildfires, which I found interesting because couldn't really get farther from Missouri.
No, I actually live in Santa Barbara, California now, so I have the last few years, and that the first year I lived there, the Hezuhita fire hit, and it was crazy. So, but it was worth trying to write a song about, and it happened to come out pretty good. So I think that it was only natural. Like, as we travel further and broader and move to different places, you kind of are going to, you know, get things sucked up into the creative vacuum, and that's kind of regurgitate itself out in some form. But I mean, we're always going to write and sing about the Ozarks to a certain degree. But no, I think broader themes, it kind of goes back to the accessibility thing. Like, we want to, you know, Westward Bounds kind of can be taken as, you know, a metaphor for westward expansion and just those types of themes that are a little bit more accessible, people might have experienced in their own lives. I think that's what we're going for with Death of a Decade.
Okay, I gotcha. And just about that particular song, I found it interesting because you speak fluent German, but as you say in the song, I don't think you speak a word of Spanish.
No, I don't speak hardly any Spanish.
So I found that little, that sort of personal tie into the, I have no idea what the hell these people are saying, but it's gotta be bad.
It's frustrating. I wish I spoke Spanish. Americans should be able to speak Spanish. Like, in Southern California especially, everybody speaks Spanish.
Right. Well, I certainly agree, and I've yet to learn it either, so maybe both of us ought to order Rosetta Stone and get on that. But,
it took 2 years of Spanish, or I took 2 years. And this is not, well, actually, this is talking bad about West Plains High School, but the Spanish teacher didn't know how to speak Spanish. I mean, that was the type of Spanish class we had. She
and it counted as an English credit.
Probably, yeah.
That's true.
Okay, well, I had a German teacher like that once, so I definitely know what you're talking about. But yeah, learning languages can be so frustrating. It's
especially
strange.
There's no connection. You don't know anybody that speaks Spanish in West Plains. There's really no incentive to learn it. You know, it seems so removed.
Yeah, growing up in Hudson, Ohio, I can tell you, I think we had one Hispanic student whose name was Jorge, but he just gave up and let people call him George because nobody got it.
Right.
Just nobody got it. So, yeah, I definitely know that feeling. And Brad, I wanted to ask you as well real quick about your contribution to Death of the Decade, because I think as a songwriter, you showed a lot of growth as well with Dead Man's Hand. Do you feel like, you know, you're looking to take more of a role in sort of expanding on what you write and maybe getting a few more in the future, or?
I mean, personally, on a personal level, I'm always writing stuff, but for the most part, it's just, you know, for Hatanka, and I like to try to have like 50 things and then just pick like the best one and be like, this is what I got, I think. You know, and then show it to the band and then have the band like really take care of the rest of it, because a lot of times me and my personal writing, I need other ears to help me like finish the song to where it needs to be, or else it'll be 2 minutes long and I'll be done with it every time. So,
well, there's nothing wrong with a 2 minute song. Roy Orbison did pretty well with 2 minute
That's
songs,
true.
You
That's
know.
True. That's true. But I mean, you know, it'll always probably be like that. You know, it's, you know, any type of ideas that I create or anyone creates in this band, if they introduce them and people like them, then, you know, could possibly make the record. So in the future, hopefully there'll be some more stuff on there. Spend some time getting it.
Awesome. Well, you seem to so far sort of have been the George Harrison of the group, you know, getting that one song in there on every album.
Yeah, try to sneak one in there.
Well, I look forward to them. I think it's, you know, as much as I already said, I like Brian as a songwriter, it's good to have a little bit of a mix in there as well. And, you know, have all of you guys sort of, like you said, you're contributing, so it's still the band's feel, but, you know, it's good to have a little bit of a different voice. Which actually brings me to Lennon, because you, my friends, just came out with your own solo project, a double EP, which we got the chance to...
Very nice, very kind write-up about.
Yes. We did review it. We did like it a lot. It was an interesting project, I think, because, you know, like I said... When I wrote that, I kind of feel like, in some ways, you might be the most restless member of the band, as far as wanting to get out and do some of your own stuff. You know, obviously, you know, Brian has a great vehicle to be able to express himself through Haha Tonka. But did you feel like this was an opportunity for you to sort of do that on your own and to get some of your own songs out there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hope that restless doesn't seem like a bad thing.
No. I mean, I don't mean like you want to get away from these guys or anything, but...
It's more just like, I think, you know, Brett was saying, I think I'm always working on something, and it's much easier for me to, I don't know, you know, the ideas aren't, I think, a lot of times strong enough to be in these records, and so it's much more fun to at least pay them their dues in my own way, if that's all I get to do with it, and then, you know, 20 people hear it, like, I don't give a shit. You know, at least I'm getting to try, you know, and make that happen. So, but yeah, and it's fun to just kind of play a bunch of stuff and try to arrange things and, you know, hopefully take that as a learning experience, and then when we're maybe be able to communicate something easier whenever we're writing as a band, you know, to be have a little more insight to the way maybe they're thinking about something. So I'm not just like, so on the eighth note, like, I hit the drum, you know, and then nobody knows what the fuck I mean. So, hopefully it expands, you know, everything a little more.
I gotcha. And do you feel like, you know, maybe in the future you will get the opportunity or will have... I guess the interest in writing some of your own songs for Haha Tonka.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Take it as it comes, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I've, you know, thrown like everybody else, throwing things in the hat. So.
I gotcha. Well, you know, like I said, for anybody who is a Haha Tonka fan, or even if you're not, Lost Accolades was a very, very cool project, and I think everybody should check it out. I especially enjoyed the lost portion of it.
Cool.
It's a bit more my speed, personally.
Yeah.
But I definitely thought the Accolades had a lot of interesting pieces, especially if you're into the funk style.
Yeah.
But
it's my dad's fault.
Okay. Well, it's nobody's fault.
Some funky,
I mean,
semen, you know.
No, I don't want to get into that. That sounds like a naval story right there.
Sounds like a good band name.
I'm not sure a good band name.
The funky semen.
Oh, Gary Bones, man. Funky Seaman.
There you go. Well, he's a musician too, so...
amazing musician.
Maybe
yeah.
You should suggest that for his next group. And, there you go.
I'll call him about it tonight. Pops, I got just the thing.
Absolutely. I'm sure he will appreciate it.
He will.
So, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about your live performances as well, because... I think that, honestly, you're one of the most kick-ass live bands out there. And anybody who hasn't seen Haha Tonka Live does not have a clue what the fuck they are missing. Because let me tell you, these guys kick ass every single time they hit the stage. And I guess, you know, I got into you, I think, you kind of have a weird history with your first album because it was released... originally without a label, is that right?
Right.
And then it was released again on Bloodshot when she signed there. So I think I actually met you guys right between there, before it had come out on Bloodshot, but after it had been out for a little
was
while.
Was it 097 show?
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. The first time I saw you was at the Beachland Ballroom, opening for the old 97s, and you totally fucking blew them away. I mean, the old 97s are famous for being an amazing live band, and you guys made them look like amateurs. I'm not kidding.
We told them that.
You know,
that's why they won't take us out.
Yeah, you got to put Rhett in his place. I mean, you know, the guy gets full of himself with all these accolades. He's got to say, man, we're better than you. Just live with it. No, but seriously, like, you guys are amazing, especially for a band that I'd honestly never heard of before. And I actually have to give Rhett Miller props because he picks the best opening bands. I mean, you guys, the Starlins, David Wax Museum, excuse me, a whole bunch of others.
The Spring Standards, that took out the solo.
That's true, they played with them too, and they are incredible live as well. I have to say, we got to see them over the summer again, and their new album is quite awesome, and Heather, who contributed to Lennon's double EP, did not have any idea that yours and theirs were both double EPs. I found that hysterical.
Yeah, that is. She and I are working on some stuff. Like, we're writing songs together. Yeah, hoping to do something later, maybe early next year.
Awesome.
They're all freaking amazing. Yeah.
They're a bunch of good people and a lot of fun. So we look forward to having them back. But anyway, so as I was saying, you guys just totally tore the house down that night. And every night since I've seen you, you really do just kick ass live. And so I want to ask you, because that really is, as far as your musical career, the biggest part of your life. I mean, you write an album, you know, it takes some time here and there to come up with songs, then you maybe take a couple weeks to get together and rehearse or whatever and record the thing and all that. But then, you know, you're done with the recording. Whereas you guys spend a good portion of your lives on the road. So I just want to get a sense from you guys what you feel that experience is like, and, you know, do you enjoy it? Why do you enjoy it? And why do you keep hitting the road so hard and play so many dates? Go ahead, Luke, start.
Yeah. I think play so many dates because, though, you know, press and blogs and things, a great outlet, you really win people over for, you know, for better or for worse in the live shows. That's where people have that visceral connection. Mm-hmm. And I think we are lucky in that our best foot forward seems to be the live shows. You know, that's sweet. We do try to bring it, try to be honest, you know, because we all believe what we're doing. As far as what it's like out there, I think V said something about it. Somebody asked him today. It's everything you hear it is, and it's nothing like you hear it is. It's extreme ups and downs, and like moments of brilliance out there as well. You know, it's a roller coaster. It's a drunken, sweaty roller coaster, and it's fun. It's a good ride for sure.
I got you. Well, coming from a guy who once broke his tour manager's leg in a
big
thing.
yes,
that was right here. So, but
I think we try to take the live show very serious. That, you know, we were actually having sort of a discussion about it in the writing process the other day, and, you know, it's always in the back of our minds to make it work live, and it's always a balance to try and write a song that can be something special on a record, and then to toss that out the window is never easy, or to do the other is never easy, you know, to go one extreme or the other. But we tried to take it real serious, and we try to not take it serious. Like, you know, I listened to the Bruce Springsteen deal where he did the keynote speech for South By. I don't know if you guys actually listened to the whole thing, but it's awesome. He's like, you know, go up there and just know that you're the best in the world, and then know also that there's always someone better. Like,
unless you're Bruce Springsteen, but
but, you know, take it serious and then not at all. I mean, I think that is when he said that, I thought that was really cool, because I really feel like we've always tried to be light about our personalities on stage and not be too, you know, artist about it, because I just want to make a connection with somebody, you know, and I think that comes across when you are honest about who you are.
What we get to do is so fun, you know, to get to do this as a job. It's mm-hmm. crazy. So it's not too hard to get pumped up for a show and have a good time on stage whenever you know. Like last night, people drove in. We're in Cincinnati, and some people were driven in a carload of like 4 hours away and made a sign, and I, you know, that was like probably a big part of their week, like to get prepped up for the show, and really made a time investment. So for us to ever walk out on a stage and not put it all out there and have a good time, and, you know, hopefully make the crowd enjoy themselves a little bit more, mm-hmm. would be a disservice.
Well, I think having done these with a lot of different artists in the last year or so, these interviews, one of the lines that struck me most was actually when I interviewed Adam Turla last summer. And, you know, we were talking about how the band was going on 11 years at the time. And he said, you know, I haven't had to have another job in 10 years. And that is just awesome. And I think you're right. I mean, to some degree, you know, you guys really are lucky to just be able to do something that you really love as, you know, your career.
Right.
I guess the question that comes out of that then is, do you feel like, as an artist, you know, the need to sort of pay that back to the fans? Or is it more that you just really enjoy it, and so therefore you want to, just out of your own pleasure, sort of give them everything that you possibly can? Does that make sense? I know it's a little...
I think it's a bit of necessity and, you know, because we still have... You don't make any money out here unless you're out here, mm-hmm. you know, doing it. So it's a little bit of necessity in that regard. But it also is a blast. You know, you need time off, you need a balance. But I don't know, I mean, it's a little bit of all those things. You definitely want to, like, people are coming out, you want to make sure, people, like, yeah, you want people to keep coming out. So if you're not out, they're not going to come, you know. If you don't keep doing it, they won't. I don't know, I'm losing myself here.
We've been very fortunate as a band, too, that it's always, we're still not a big band by any stretch of the word, but we've always slowly been growing. So I think we've always been lucky in that there's never been like, oh, things used to be better, you know, everyone was like this. It's always like been a slow grow, nice. Right. So things have always been positive and like, oh, things, this is really cool. Now we get to do this. Now we're able to tour here. Now we're able to do this. So I think that we're still able to think of it as like we're the luckiest guys in the world to get to do this, because personally I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. That didn't work out. So now dream number two is to be in a touring rock band, and I don't know, I feel very fortunate to be able to do this.
Awesome. Well, I think
if we were to compare the two, basically we're at the level that if I was a Major League Baseball player, I would be somewhere in the Royals organization.
Okay.
Probably so, okay.
Probably backup center fielder. Right? Okay.
Yeah. Well,
we're,
you
right
know,
there.
Pretty much anybody can play left field for the Indians right now, so if you want the chance, I think you just have to go up to Jacobs Field and just say, dude, I got a glove. Like, seriously, I'm better than Johnny Damon right now. Come on.
Does anybody call that park Progressive Field?
No. No.
Why
and we do not call it Quicken Loans Arena either. It's Gund Arena. Because the Jacobs brothers who own the team paid to have the name for a certain amount of time, and as soon as that time was up, they sold it to somebody who was the highest bidder.
It was so perfect. Jacobs,
I mean,
Field. The Jake. It was,
yes.
It was
and perfect. Everybody here still calls it that. I mean, you know, it's one of those corporate crap things that you just got to deal with.
It's
but
pretty crappy.
Yes. Progressive Field. We are very mad about that. Even though I myself, politically, am quite the liberal, so at least from that perspective. But I do honestly feel that Flo, the progressive lady, is quite possibly the devil. So I'm seriously afraid of her. So yeah, that really hurts. That
gets
really
crazy
hurts.
Eyes.
Yeah, among other things. But to jump onto to something you were saying, I think that, you know, because of the type of music that you guys play, you know, you're sort of in that alt country kind of a niche market, where honestly you're not ever going to be big pop stars.
No.
I mean, you kind of gotta know that going in it. But at the same time, the fans of this kind of music are really loyal. You know, there may not be 80 million of them out there, but there's a lot of them who really listen to this kind of music and really get into it.
Go to an Avett Brothers show or a Mumford & Sons show.
Well, there you go. There are some that certainly do pick up on it.
And you can reach reach a pretty high level. Wilco, you know, kind of started out much more in the Americana sphere. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, you can get as big as any other, well, not like the Justin Bieber size stuff.
Right.
Like pretty big in this genre.
And if you ever start crossing over into Justin Bieber fans, I will stop listening to you. So that's I think that is fair.
You don't got the fever.
I just don't, man. I just don't. I mean, you know, I've caught a lot of things from a lot of girls, but
never Bieber fever.
No. But what I was going to say is, you know, in some ways, you kind of have an advantage because your popularity doesn't rely so much on other people promoting you and the hit makers deciding that this is going to be the next big thing and all that. It really is about you getting out to go to the grog shop and other places like this and making one-on-one connections, you know, and me bringing my friend tonight, hopefully, who I've introduced to you guys before and likes you, and, you know, get her getting to see you for the first time and be like, shit, these guys really are awesome. So do you... In some ways, I guess, do you guys feel like almost your destiny is more in your own hands than some of those other groups out there?
We learned that watching this band that we're touring with right now, Murder by Death. Mm-hmm. That band is bigger than a lot of the stuff a lot of people think are huge bands. Murder by Death can draw huge crowds wherever they go, and yet they don't get the type of national media attention that they should.
Mm-hmm.
Pitchfork isn't reviewing their records. You know, they deserve so much more because they're such a great band.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they will be around 10 years from now, and all those other bands that you think are big won't.
Right.
I think Murder by Death is a great example of that career trajectory.
But again, this is something I talked with Adam about last time, and with Matt about just before we got started here. You know, they are almost the definition of a cult band. Like, there is nobody in the world who is lukewarm on Murder by Death. It's either you are a huge fucking Murder by Death fan or you're not. And, you know, again, they may not have the Justin Bieber audience out there, but they have a lot of people who really like them and who will go to every single one of their shows and buy every single one of their albums. And, you know, I think you guys in a lot of ways are similar. You know, people I talk to who go to your concerts, you know, they just fall in love and they really connect with the band in that way. And you just don't get that with a lot of the big pop bands, you know? So I think that if you keep going, like you said, you know, every single show you're growing your audience. So that's kind of a cool way to do it, I think, compared to the corporate model that we've got now.
Yeah, the major label model is so hit and miss. Like, we've had lots of friends and fans that were on major labels that you get one chance, and if it doesn't hit, then your band's done. You know, the label owns the band name and rights and everything, and that's all right, didn't work out. Which that seems so crazy, you know, to not build it naturally. And, you know, it's going to be a long, hard slog. And I think that if you know that going in, then you'll be a little bit more prepared. Like, oh, okay, now things are actually getting better. The shows are growing. You see that progression.
Gotcha. So I do want to ask you, since you brought them up too, the folks that you're playing with tonight, Murder by Death, who we are big fans of at No Surf as well, just joined Bloodshot Records with you guys, so you're now label mates. Do you feel like this is a pretty cool thing, having some more friends join the label?
We should let it be known that it's all because of us.
Okay.
I mean, hands down, it would have never happened.
Hear that, Nan?
Yeah.
No, I think it's awesome. I mean, I think they're a great fit to what the same sort of thing. Like, Bloodshot is a very cult sort of label, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Very devout fans that enjoy the label. And if, you know, if they say it's cool, then people are like, okay, it must be cool. And I think they're a really, really great fit. Actually, one of the better fits I've seen signed to Bloodshot in a while, personally. I think it's going to be great. So.
Cool.
I think, on a more serious note, the guys in the Bloodshot office were starting to feel so guilty about their own drinking problems that they needed to bring in a band that could make them feel better about their own alcoholism.
That sounds about right. And if anybody can do it, yes. Murder by Death is the band. So, that's cool. Well, I think you're right, Lynn. I think that you know, it's good for you guys. You're a good fit with that label because they do sort of have that attitude. You know, they pick the best bands, whether or not they're the most popular bands. They pick the best ones or artists for their solo artists, obviously, and they support them to the extent that they need to make things work on their own. And I think that's why it has become such a popular label among, you know, guys like myself. I mean, there's a few of them out there where you just know, you know, Bloodshot, New West, whatever, Sugar Hill. There's a couple of them out there. Whoever they sign, you want to listen to them. You at least want to give them a shot because you know that they only choose the best quality stuff to put their name on it. So I think it's going to be nice having them on the label as well. But I do want to ask you, getting back to the touring, you're on the road with these guys for 6.5 weeks. Anybody want to kill anybody yet? I mean, I guess that is one of the questions about, you know, life on the road, you know, with these long, hard slogs. You know, how do you guys do it?
Honestly, like, it's so easy touring with Murder by Death. They're the nicest people in the world. As Matt, his nickname is BattleBot, probably said, I've heard him say several times, hey, we have another jerk-free tour. You know, we're on tour with Corey Chisholm as well. There's nobody that's... there's not that personality on the tour, so then there's not going to be those instances where somebody wants to kill somebody else. Because everybody's having a good time, and the shows are great. Very little to complain about.
I got you.
I can't even think of an example of a band that we toured with where somebody was just rubbing the wrong way. You know? I think those bands like that are either one huge or they just weed themselves out.
Right.
I don't think you could be a prick and make it out here too long.
Right. Well, again, I mean, it almost seems like something that's endemic to the type of music that you guys play. The whole, you know, even broadening out to the whole indie rock scene. I mean, I lived in New York for a long time. There are a lot of asshole bands in New York, but they don't make it very long. And, you know, once you get out and even do, you know, some amount of touring, and especially with alt country people and outlaw country people and that whole sect, it just seems like, you know, the nicest bunch of people you'd ever want. You know, there's something about that mindset of not going into it to become a rock star, but going into it because this is what you want to do, that makes you sort of, yeah, I guess it's the personality that leads you to that rather than the other way around. But it seems like, you know, people in this business who are in those genres are just freaking awesome people.
Well, and if they're not, I mean, word gets around. The circles get smaller and smaller. And then when you hear about, oh, well, such and such is a, you know, a bunch of dicks, like, you're not going to go out with that band.
Right.
So it just, like Luke said, I think that's kind of how they get weeded out. You know, you just don't want to deal with that. And I personally enjoy these big package tours way more than when we're out just by ourselves, because you have new faces every day. You get out of the van and you get to catch up with everybody and, like, you know, retell the stories from everybody's perspective from the day before or whatever. And it's so much more easygoing, I feel like. When you're out by yourself, you're constantly sort of trying to make new friends and you never quite get there, you know, because it's just like a day in a town or something. So I think this is much easier on everybody.
There's also a shared suffering element to whenever you're touring on with a couple other acts, because every day you guys all load in and it's like everybody's pulling the same wagon, and you see it, oh yeah, it's 101 degrees, but we had to do this yesterday, and there, you know, it's like, you see it from other acts, and you're like, oh, this is, you know, we're going to get to do it on stage tonight, so it's all worth it.
Gotcha. Well, it definitely must be a slog, especially on these longer tours, you know, just going from city to city every single day, so it must be nice to have people that, you know, you can sort of share that experience with and pitch to when you need to and all of that as well. So wrapping up here, I do want to ask you guys just a couple of general questions, just because, you know, we've been talking some specifics here, but for people who haven't gotten the chance to see you live and get to hear you in the past, just so they know a little bit more about you, I do want to ask you guys, you know, for each of you, what do you sort of feel is the core of Ha Ha Tonka as a band? You know, what are you trying to do as a band? What kind of music do you feel like you're trying to present? I know that's a big general question, but that's why I ask it, because I want you to answer however you feel best. So.
It's also a thinker of it. You have to think about it for a second.
That's true, and
you can sing a ditty to your listeners.
Well, I don't know if you want me to do that necessarily, but I don't know, we could. I thought you only sang bass.
Oh.
Yeah,
he's been singing the whole time. It's just so low. Your computer's not been picking up the frequency.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we could do some, Johnny Cash or something.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, I think for me, it is generally about this side of it. You know, I personally enjoy performing the music. To me, that's like the fruit of the labor that we put into writing it. Like, I like writing it, but it can be so daunting that, like, this is the big reward, I think. Because I never listen to our records, but I listen to it every day still, right. You know, so it's kind of, to me, that's kind of the most.
That's
most
not
fun
true,
part.
By the way. Leonard was rocking some Usual Suspects in the band.
I can believe that.
I hear it through his headphones.
Just singing along.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to pick out new harmonies. But I don't know. I think.
I mean, just to be fair, I was today, but that's a completely different thing. I had the Death of a Decade vinyl on before I came over here, so you know.
I mean, if we're doing, but you know, as far as the kind of music we're trying to make, I hope that we're not. I don't think that we are at all like trying to be an alt country band or trying to be something. Hopefully, you know, that'll be expansive as we grow as people and musicians like Primus and topically or whatever. Hopefully, the sound will always evolve. Too, and the beautiful part about being a band that loves to play live is you always get to revisit what you did before, because we can always play the old songs, we can always do that kind of thing, so kind of capturing a timeline and always kind of revisiting them with the live performance, so I think that's why I enjoy it.
Do you have anything to add, Brian?
I mean, I love almost every element of what we do, and Lennon talked about the live stuff. I love the recording process, and right now in the writing process, we have all these demos and song ideas that can go in a million different directions, and it's a magical time for those songs, for me anyway, knowing that it's endless possibilities, and you know, from here on out, it usually becomes like, well, now it's going this direction, so that cuts off what it could have. And so right now, there's so many different songs we have that could be, they could still be, you know, the greatest song of all time. And then, you know, once you see them.
Oh, we got a load on.
Oh, we got a session. As our former tour manager, James Dean.
Righto.
Real asshole.
Well, speaking of people you don't like to tour with.
That's why Luke broke his leg.
Oh, yeah, you know. Somebody had to do it, right? Somebody had to do it.
I lost my train of thought.
Okay. Well, it was a very short train then.
Yeah, usually is. Never a long ride.
You're talking about the endless possibilities.
Yes. The new songs that you're coming up with. And
yeah, I think that's a really cool thing that we get to do. Because, you know, when you're a kid or a high school and you're playing around with your first four-track recorder, you know, just hearing stuff that you're creating, you know, there's a real, that's very enjoyable before it becomes a finished product, because as Lennon said, we don't listen to our own records usually after they're done,
right?
But before they are, when it could still be something better than it might be, that's a neat moment to play around with.
Well, they definitely come out pretty fucking awesome anyway, so I don't know how much better you could get. So.
Well, there's a lot that's of other people involved in that too. So.
True that.
Thankfully.
That. Luke, do you have anything you'd like to?
What's the? I guess for me, you know, I'd hope that. Always true to ourselves, and that it can be an escapism for people to come to the shows. You know, mm-hmm. Hopefully they, you know, lift them out of something if they're not in a good spot, or distracted at least for a little bit. Come out in a slightly better place than what you're in.
Awesome. Well, you know, like I said, from my perspective, you guys definitely do that. You hit it hard every single time, and you're easily one of the best live bands in the country. So I'm looking forward to the show here at the Grog Shop. And I just want to say for everybody out there who's been listening to this interview, if Haha Tonka is coming through your town, fucking go and see them. Because if you don't, you are missing out. Anyway, I really want to thank all four members of Haha Tonka, Lennon Bone, Brent Anderson, Lucas Long, and Brian Roberts. It was great to talk to you guys. And like I said, I know you're about to kick some ass. So we're looking forward to it.
Thanks for having us, man.
Awesome. And this has been another edition of No Surf Music, Burning River, Fireside Chats. This has been a No Surf Music, Burning River, Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.